Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. I'm excited to introduce this week's guest. Sophia Geraghty brings a bold and refreshing perspective to the conversation about gender, culture, and balance. At just 31, Sophia is the deputy editor of Travel Weekly Australia, a seasoned B2B journalist with over 7 years' experience across travel, media, insurance, and finance. She's a skilled public speaking coach, presenter, and moderator. Sophia also writes Diary of a Human Resource, a thoughtful newsletter exploring our relationship with work, tech, and culture. Sophia's story begins in England, raised in a household steeped in old-fashioned patriarchal values and shaped by her Irish-Sicilian Catholic heritage. As the only girl amongst brothers, she was surrounded by masculine energy and taught that men led the family, while women were expected to respect, conform, and remain ladylike. Experiences that she says aren't as common among women of her generation today. However, it was precisely these beginnings that ignited her strong feminist views. Views she has since re-evaluated as an adult. In a recent opinion piece that caught my attention, Sophia argued that masculinity itself isn't the enemy. Toxicity is. Titled Without Compassion, Masculinity Destroys, Without Discipline, It Drifts, she challenges us to rethink how we frame masculinity, not as something to reject, but something to rebalance. Hello, Sophia. How did you navigate your adolescent years under the influence of your early childhood years?
Yeah, I think it's hard. It's funny because I've been writing like a book about this recently, and I think my adolescent years, I did something like a lot of teenage girls did, which was masking and stuff. So it's like I had all these emotions and I kind of learned like, okay, well, people prefer it if I don't express myself, if I don't express anger, if I'm not too emotional. So I'm just going to detach. And I was like, you know, it's classic. I didn't realize I had no awareness at that age. You know, I was a teenager. So I didn't realize that I couldn't just detach. I was like, well, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to ignore these emotions. And so I focus a lot, like I think like a lot of young women, of basing everything on what other people wanted me to be, like really observing, like, this is what, how my friends like it when I behave. This is how boys like it when I behave. This is how my parents want me to be. And what I wanted just wasn't even factored. So I was super probably like 10 or 11, like suffering with depression, anxiety, like things that we speak about a lot more now. I don't think they're even spoken about even then. But all these kind of things, which I didn't realize at the time, was the result of me suppressing my emotions like every day, all day.
I'm surprised you can laugh about it, but I am relieved as well. And
it's been a long time.
After having a conversation with Bryn Edwards recently, he's actually coined the maladaptive term. So what happens is we condition ourselves in certain scenarios, whether it's work, friends, you know, relationships, to be a certain way and not show all of ourselves. That's actually a sad indictment, I think, on society. So what's changed for you now? You're an adult and you're able to be who you want to be, where you want to be.
Yeah, so I think I realized like the hard way that that is not, you know, being like that put me in jobs that weren't me. I was in finance, in insurance as a management consultant, which if you, you know, you can look at me for a second and that you're like, nah, that is not a fit. Like I say that to people and they like look me up and down and they're like, what? But yeah, I learned the hard way. I was super miserable, you know, job I didn't like, awful, awful boyfriend, all these things. Anyway, for me, it was actually going back to stuff I loved as a kid before that social conditioning really hit. So it was, I did lots of acting lessons. I did improv. I just did all this stuff that was just play. Like, it was just going back to like the joy of like storytelling and having fun and all like these little things that I had just loved as a child, but maybe, you know, thought, oh, they're not important.
Nurturing your inner child is the way I would interpret what you've just said, because I think that's where we need to tap back into, you know, those joys we felt in childhood. They're the things that we should be nurturing in our children so that they can navigate life in a different way and find their joy in what they do every day. You know, like, I think if you're going to make a living, you should enjoy it. Do you think that you've found your place now in enjoying your day-to-day life?
Oh, 100%. I think that's the thing, because I remember when I was doing improv and acting, all these things after work. And at that time, I was still in finance, but as a journalist. And people, I mean, this was in London, I'm English, but people like, why are you doing acting lessons? Do you want to be an actor? And I'm like, no, like, I don't want to be an actor. Like, everything, like, we think hobbies and everything's for our job. Like, you know, unless you're going to get money for it, why do you want to do it? But then actually, like, what happened is the more I was happy and brought in play and, you know, being myself and being authentic, the more I just attracted all these job opportunities and people based on that. So now, like, years later, I mean, I get to travel for work. Like, that's amazing. Like, I got to stay in a 5-star villa with its private swimming pool for work in Thailand. And it's like, it's because when you prioritize your own happiness in your life, you attract opportunities and things where happiness, like the travel industry, people, like, no one has to travel. We do it for joy. It's not a necessity, but we do it for the spice of life. And I think the more you prioritize that, the more you're going to end up getting paid for that and doing it as work.
Would you credit those experiences in going back to improv and acting with building confidence? And how did that aid you in getting to where you are now?
I think definitely confidence, but I think it's, you know, I think we think confidence looks a certain way. It was trust in my intuition. Because it was like in improv, there's a big thing about, and acting actually, because I did this like method acting, and it was all about speaking from the gut and not from the head. So that, like, whilst before, when I was anxious in my teenage years, I'd be in a conversation with someone and my head's like, what's the right thing to say? What do they want me to say? What's the next, you know, I'm like analyzing to understand what they want. But then after like trusting my gut, I'm like, oh, my intuition is going to tell me to say something. And I'm just going to say it. And you know what the weirdest thing is? I don't know if you ever have this, and I know it's a bit woo-woo, but sometimes my intuition would tell me to say something and the person gets really scared and they're like, oh my God, that's so weird, because X, Y, Z. Like, I did it to a girl once and I was just randomly was like, oh, do you know that song by Billy Joel, Vienna? And she was like, that's so weird. My boyfriend proposed to me with that song. And it was nothing to do with nothing. And she was horrified. And I was like, I don't even know. It just like, just came in and I said it and she was like, what?
But that's the art of connecting, you know, like, I feel like if we trust our gut and we sit in our intuition, it leads us to these positive outcomes because we're actually listening to our body and the energy that we're reading. So kudos to you for reaching that point.
Thank you.
One thing you said to me earlier is that you actually coach people in public speaking. And I'm wondering how your experience got you to a public speaking place. I mean, is that something you pursued yourself?
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I just started. I was terrified of public speaking. And this was, like I said, like, I was really young, like early 20s after the bad job, bad boyfriend, all that. And I just, my gut was like, do public speaking. And I think it just kind of transformed my life, because it went from, you know, being in fear and being like, what do people want to hear, to actually being on stage and trusting my words. So, and I think just seeing like how much that actually transformed my life, because I was just like, oh, I just want to like be free. So that's why I did public speaking. And then before I knew it, like I did it outside of work probably for about 5 years before I started doing it in work. And then from having that, I ended up doing it as a job. So in London, I was a TV presenter in finance. So it was usually always, yeah, it was so weird. It was me. I'm like 27 at the time, 28, interviewing all these like executives for like banks and insurance companies. But because I'd done the work, I'm just like chatting. I was just myself. I'm like, oh, yeah, this. And then as a result, like all these super senior exec guys are like suddenly opening up a bit more and being a bit less like robots. And it's just actually seeing the impact that you have in those environments when you're yourself as well.
You talk a lot about London and England. What made you come to Australia? Like, why come to this vast brown land?
It was funny, actually. It was a similar thing with intuition. So I had a nudge for years that I wasn't meant to be in London. Like, just had a nudge. I need to get out of here. Every other weekend, I was like going off and escape in London, like getting cheap Ryanair flights to like Denmark for like £20, and like just spending my weekends going for really trying things. So I had this nudge, but obviously, like my family are there. I had friends there. I had a good job as well. I'd finally got like a good salary and a good career. So every time I was like, my gut was like, I don't want to be in London. I was like, yes, no, but think of your job. Like, you've got a great life. Like, stop. And so I'd do that. And then again, it was a bit my brother, my dad was married before my mum. So I had siblings from my dad's first marriage. And one of my brothers, he got diagnosed with terminal cancer at 37 and then passed away at 38. And he was in the army. He was like fit. He was healthy, like wife to lovely, lovely boys. And it just kicked me up the ass, to be honest. I was like, I remember being sat in my room in like Islington, and I was like, I think I was 28. And I was like, so if I died at 38 as well, because you just assume you're going to live to like 81, because that's the average. Like, I have the years. Like, there's no rush. I'll just carry on rolling. And then I was like, shit, like, wow, if I've only got 10 years, like, what would I do? And then I started packing up my stuff. I had no job. I hadn't even left my job. I just packed all my stuff because I was so sure I was leaving. And then within 2 weeks of doing that, I literally had a job offer in Sydney. And within like 4 weeks of that, I was on a flight. I know, like, because I was so clear. I was like, look, I had like no money. I don't know what my plan was, but I was like, whatever happens, I'll quit. I'll go to Bali. I'll figure it out. And then as soon as I had that mindset, I got a job offer. So it was nuts.
It's
I'll look back.
amazing. I'm just thinking now, I'm not taking the right approach. I need to start packing a suitcase or something if I want to travel. That's brilliant. That's very, very good because it's your intention in a suitcase. I love it. And you're prepared to just like, no, I've had enough. That's it. I'm done with this. Next. So now you're working as a travel writer, a travel journalist here in Australia. What does that look like? And what do you love about the opportunities, as you mentioned earlier, of getting to go to wonderful places?
So I'm a travel trade journalist. So I write for people work in the travel industry. So people, like, I say I'm a travel journalist, and people always go on my Instagram and they're really disappointed because they expect me to be like an influencer. And I'm like, no, because like our audience are a lot like travel advisors, travel agents, people work in the industry. But I actually, I've worked in lots of industries. I've always done B2B, business-to-business journalism. And out of anywhere, travel has like loads of women who work in the industry and also loads of people that are lifestyle first. So it's out of travel, out of all industries, you get people who they're like, they want money. Who does not want money? We want money, we want trips, we want nice things. But they're also not just driven by like status and money. They also like want to be home with their kids during the day, or they want to like work abroad 3 months of the year, or they want to like, they're like passionate, interesting people. So I think I actually, like, I love traveling for work, but I also just love that business aspect of like, doing like all the money mindset stuff they do with like advisors, because a lot of advisors are women and a lot of them like undercharge, or they're afraid to go for luxury clients, or they're like, I interviewed a woman the other day and she grew up in a caravan in like New South Wales and she's like a luxury expert. And she was like, all that stuff of like, oh, well, I can't sell luxury because I'm from a poor family, or like, I'm not that kind of person. So, yeah, it's an interesting industry to be in.
What sort of influence do you think the stories you tell have on the people who read them?
I think one thing I try to do is I think just chat to people and get that kind of like community feel. I think it is a bit more like that with travel. It's like when I was doing finance stuff, it's a lot of like cyber security, or the, I don't know, economy. And I used to interview this, and it was very like up here. Whilst I like with travel, it's like actually, what can we do as small business owners? How can we make life easier? Like, what can we do? It feels like much more real, to be honest. It's mainly engagement. And I've actually kind of seen, I know your background's in journalism as well, but I'm seeing journalism is a bit different these days because I think it used to be very much like people are the audience and we're up here like giving them news and like telling them this. And especially with trade and, with how many different things online, I see it more now as like engagement, like hearing different people from the industry. And even today we're chatting, like I didn't realize there's a real trauma in the travel industry about COVID. Because so many people, like you got to think, these were like small business owners and they overnight lost all their income. And loads of people like left the industry, understandably. Yeah, really, really sad stories. I think I'm only actually realizing even now, like people died, even lost their lives because of the stress, which is, I only found that out today. And I was just like, that's so sad. It's like all these people coming back to the travel industry and they're like terrified of something like that happening again and stuff like that. So I kind of see it as actually kind of like gathering all these stories together and sharing them so other people feel like, oh, you know, I'm not alone feeling like this, or I'm going to ask about AI, like, you know, lots of fear about all that kind of stuff as well.
We touched on feminism and the changes it's brought to our lives in different ways through different generations. How do you think the feminist movement has changed life for you today?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think it's so funny because I'm quite into outside of work, oh, in work and outside of work, actually, like women empowerment and coaching. And I do coaching and I've also been coached. I did a women's business coaching this year. I do like money mindset coaching, all this stuff. So it's conversations I'm involved with quite a lot. And there's with feminism, there's funny, there is a bit of a backlash at the moment because there's lots of like, there's a post going around in certain circles on like Instagram, where it's like the feminism leaving my body as he, I don't know, orders dinner for us, or the feminism leaving my body as he books the flights for us. And it's kind of like this backlash, maybe saying, oh, I don't want to do everything alone. Like, I actually want a partner and I want, you know, love and support. And I think it's, for me, how I see it, there was a time where women, to be like a strong woman, you had to kind of be really tough. That was the early stages of feminism. And I think we needed these women. Like, I'm never going to say a bad thing about these women, because these women that went into finance and like went into politics, oh, like the things they would have gone through, they had to be tough. And they were the first women to go forward. So I really, I'm grateful. Like you said, how it impacted my life. Like, I'm so grateful that people of my generation, younger, have the opportunity to be soft and more ourselves, because we had these women go first. Because we wouldn't, these weren't tough women hadn't gone first, I wouldn't be sat here in my little pink dress being, you know, deputy editor or whatever. I would like not be taken seriously in the slightest, but because of these tough women. So yeah, it's, I think in many good ways it impacted. But yeah, sometimes there's still that mindset that to be a strong woman, you have to be tough and do everything by yourself.
Almost masculine, would you say?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's something I've actually touched on a bit in my own personal life, where the way it's being demonstrated today, I mean, especially post the Me Too movement. So that had a big impact on men. And I've had conversations with other men all over the world about how it's affected men and boys and how they're not actually sure what being a man is. This toxic masculinity label as something that's denigrating all men. How do you feel about, you know, the way we are approaching gender equality?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think, you know, especially, and it's funny, it's come from the Me Too movement, because I think a lot of women, you know, myself included, I'm sure like most women, experience at some stage some kind of trauma or something where a man crossed their boundaries, whether it's on one scale being catcalled and made to feel unsafe in that way, or much worse, it's that experience of being physically safe and physically unsafe because of someone else's like desire or want to interact with you. And which I, you know, I completely understand a lot, all the pain around that. So I guess it's kind of, it was like for years, women couldn't react to this. And then suddenly we could. And it was like the floodgates are open and it like men are this and men are that. And like they, you know, and it was like for the first time in history, women are like, I can speak about this. Like, and it came out. And I think that was a place, there was a place for that and that was necessary. But like, we don't want to stay there. Because especially if you're heterosexual and you want, you know, romantic relationships with men and stuff like that, it's like what we want is both parties to be able to communicate and be honest with each other and feel safe to be honest with each other. We don't want it to just be like, oh, men are awful or men are this or like blah blah, like completely like demonize everyone. We actually want the trauma, like to heal the trauma, rather than trauma. If you've had trauma, it's a blanket. It's like if you've been bitten by a dog, you're like, oh, dogs are awful, dogs are the worst, like blah, blah. But actually we want safety so that women feel safe to interact with men and recognize if they're not safe and that women are protected from predators and everything. But we also want men to feel safe to be honest without being attacked or demonized or shamed. Yeah, there was that whole stage where it was classic white man would say that. And it's like, well, what? We're lumping him in with every one of his gender and skin color rather than actually, you can get a white man who is a strong advocate for change and super liberal. And it's not, yeah, you can't just judge someone by something like that or generalize in the other way.
That's what I loved about what I saw you'd written, you know, that you and actually taking it to a public level where you said, you know, I feel like I need to defend men in this post. And I was like, wow. And you were saying how you never thought it'd be you saying that. So what sort of reaction have you had to publicly broadcasting your feelings?
It's so funny because like, I'm still like, oh, I can't believe I this is me. Because I think there was one stage where I was like, you know, and it's hard to say this because I love like the women I connected to in that space. And I know some amazing women from that space, but I was expressing about women's rights for a long time and I connected with a group of women and we were all like super, you know, it was all like, we're all like super vocal, rebellious women and like, that's great. But then, yeah, like I started to grow and heal and stuff, maybe in a different direction and I start to see things differently. And then you kind of see the other side of it where you're like, I was like, oh, I don't really want to post angry posts anymore. Or I don't really feel the need to like call stuff out and do this. Like I'm actually feel really safe and happy and I feel comfortable to engage. And I was like, oh, mate, you know, am I going to be rejected? Like, if I say anything? And then I realized, I was like, well, whether it's women or men, I don't want to be speaking out of fear. So if I start expressing like saying, actually, yeah, well, exactly. Because I think I was posting something the other day and I disagreed with someone I know who's quite a strong feminist. She did a post and I was like, oh, actually, I disagree with what she's saying. And I went to comment and say that and I felt scared to. And then I was like, no, like I shouldn't be. And so I said it. I was like, I disagree. And, you know, it's fine. But I was like, I don't want to go one way where like, now I'm scared to engage with a feminist or like someone who's really, you know, I want to be able to safe to challenge everyone.
And it's exactly what I took away from our, you know, conversation 2 seconds ago was that when you were talking about feeling safe, well, fear's the opposite of that, isn't it? And I think a lot of this has been born out of fear. And it's time for us now to find our safe space and to say, you know what, we've come a long way and we're sort of happy where we are. So do we need to continue in the vitriol?
Yeah, exactly. And I think safety, you know, we've got obviously physical safety and we talked in the Me Too is a lot about that, but there's also like the psychological safety as well. And I think it's like, it's important for both genders or whoever to feel safe that they can express something. If it's done, you know, obviously if they're being aggressive or violent, that's a different matter. But if they're expressing something in an honest, you know, authentic way, then it's, I mean, I hate cancel culture, but yeah, it shouldn't be like, oh, you can't say that or you're, you know, cause we're all gonna say things every now and again, cause we grew up when we grew up and everything that probably could have gender biases or racial biases or like whatever, like we're all learning really. And unless someone's like vindictively like sexist or whatever, but if someone's just got sprayed something the wrong way or something, you want to be like, oh, hey, you know, this, rather than like, you're a bigot. Like if they're just like, oh,
it's
they're just trying to engage.
We should be able to have these conversations without reaching an emotional crescendo with our unconscious biases. So for that, I am extremely grateful. And I thank you for your time in sharing your experience, your thoughts, and your ideas. Sophia, it's been absolutely fabulous talking to you today.
Thank you very much. Very much enjoyed it.
Travel journalist and public speaking coach Sophia Geraghty sharing her cultural heritage and the influence of her family views and losses on the life she lives today. My takeaway? The need for compassion and discipline in how we approach masculinity and gender inequity. If you'd like to subscribe to Sophia's newsletter or connect with her on socials, you'll find the links in the show notes. Recently, I've had a flood of feedback from Gen Z through Gen Y and even Gen X about what these conversations mean to people like you. If you'd like to connect with me, send me an email, follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, or Threads. I'd love to hear from you. Until next week, let's be the change we want to see in the world. Connect with me on my website, where you can subscribe to news and see my children's books that will help you have important conversations about life and nature. You'll find all my social links there as well. I'm Kim Clyden. Until next week, remember to be the change you want to see in the world.